Hello, Relay FM members. Thank you so much for your continued support this year and every year. And no matter what show you support and how you support us, we genuinely appreciate it. Casey Liss and I produce a show called Analog every month, where by and large, we talk about what's going on in our lives, how technology intersects with that. We talk about the personal stuff that's happening. We sometimes venture into F1. Basically, if you like either me or Casey or both of us as people, you will enjoy Analog.
That's actually the best elevator pitch I think I've heard yet. That is it's very well done.
If you don't like us, then you won't like the show. Like,
that's true.
I mean, so I feel like it goes both ways. We have been doing a thing for the last few years for our membership special. We watch a movie. And the last couple of years have been racing-focused movies because Casey and I are both Formula One fans. And this year we chose to watch, by Casey's recommendation, the 2013 movie Rush, which is focused on James Hunt, played by Chris Hemsworth, and Niki Lauda, played by Daniel Brühl. It's got
something like
out there, so yeah. I'm going to give that my best shot. Brühl. They portray the rivalry, the Formula One rivalry between the two of them. Was it between the 60s and 70s? Is that the time period?
No, I think it was, we're in mid to late 70s.
Okay, so it's in the 70s. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the 1970s rivalry between Formula One rivals James Hunt and Niki Lauda. I remember the trailers for this when it came out. I remember seeing the trailers in the cinema and thought to myself, I want to see that movie. I watched this movie for the first time last night.
Okay.
It took me 9 years, but I have finally seen Rush. It was on Netflix, which I was very happy about. I didn't even need to buy it.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I had seen this around the time it came out, which was, again, in 2013, which is funny because, as we've spoken about on Analog many, many, many times, I have a dear friend that I met in college that has been trying for, at this point, literally 20 years to get me to watch F1. Mm-hmm. And he's the one who turned me on to Top Gear and has been very influential in it probably in my life in general, but particularly in the automotive adjacent sections of my life. Mm-hmm. And anyways, he had been trying to get me into F1 for years. And I didn't really get into F1 until around the time Drive to Survive came out, which was like 2018, 2019, something like that.
I think it started in 2019 of the 18 season.
There you go. Yeah. Something like that. I mean, the point is it was well after Rush came out, right? But I did see Rush. I don't remember if I saw it in the theaters or probably at home. But one way or another, I saw it then. I'd seen it like once or twice in the interim. And then I watched it again yesterday morning. So about 24 hours ago as we record. Mm-hmm. And I have different thoughts on this movie now than I did the last few times I've seen it.
Okay.
So, Mike, I have different thoughts than the first couple times I've seen this, but if you would like to read your prepared opening statement, I would love to hear it.
I haven't got an opening statement this time. I was actually, you know, going into this movie expecting I would enjoy this movie, and I did. I enjoyed this movie very much. I think that Ron Howard did a really good job. I like the way it's shot. This movie feels like it's come from another time. It doesn't look like it was made in 2013.
That's a great observation.
The coloring of it and stuff like that, it looks like it is older. And there are a lot of interesting visuals throughout this movie. I think the biggest thing that they did, and I think it was really nicely done, and me and Adina were talking about this after we watched it, they did not shy away from quite graphic violence. Not violence, but graphic scenes of burned people, decapitated drivers. We see into a broken leg at one point.
Yeah.
Like, they really do a good job, I think, of showing the danger that was much worse during these days, to the point that in the kind of final set piece, in the race in Japan, you know that this is where they show the majority of the actual driving, especially James Hunt's driving, right, to try and finish the race in third so he could win the championship.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that we'd seen so much graphic stuff, the tension was very strong during that moment, because there is that feeling of, like, if something bad's going to happen, they will show it to us.
Yeah.
So I think that was actually really well done. And I would say not in a gratuitous way. You know, like the stuff in the hospital with Niki Lauda too, like especially with the lung vacuuming thing. Oh my God. It's like, I couldn't even, you know, it's one of those things where I'm like, I can't even watch this. It reminded me of the movie, the Danny Boyle movie, 128 Hours, which is based on the guy who had to cut his own arm off.
I'm familiar with this, although I've not seen it. Yeah. But yes, I'm familiar with it.
Because he got trapped while rock climbing. And again, it's like, this is painful, physically uncomfortable to watch, but is important to the story, right? And like, so watching Niki Lauda go through these horrible medical procedures, which basically feel like, you know, with modern day medicine, whatever they've done, like by bumbling idiots, right? Like, because it's so, this is so old, right? It's like 50 years ago in theory of what, you know, like,
oh, gosh,
in
you're
time, right.
Right?
So, like, of course, everything seems primitive because it's 50 years since the events in the movie, that like it really like it, but it adds to the experience of understanding Lauda's position. Like, yeah. I feel like we needed to see all of what he went through, both to understand what he says to James Hunt, which is about, you were equally responsible for getting me back in the car.
Mm-hmm.
I also love the line delivery on that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's like, getting me back in the car. Like, it says, I don't know, it's an interesting way he says it. And I think that it also is important for us to understand why Lauda would give up, right?
Yeah.
Because he retires from that race. I think we needed to have seen all of the pain that he went through to understand that. But I'm jumping ahead. I like this movie a lot, and I'm happy to have a little bit more information about this story that I only knew a little bit about.
Yeah, that I completely agree with, because I was, you know, familiar in passing with Niki Lauda, particularly because he was still on the Formula One scene, at least tangentially.
He was an advisor to Mercedes until his death, which was, he died within the last year.
I think it was 2019. Or something like that, but it was, I mean, time is a flat circle. It was very recently, no matter how you slice it. And so anyway,
yeah, you're right. 2019. Thank
but
you.
So it feels like last year for sure. Mm. And so, you know, the first time I saw this movie, I knew nothing about F1, knew nothing about the rivalry. And then, you know, I probably forgot everything about the movie. And I'd seen it, like I said, once or twice in the interim. When I watched it yesterday morning, I liked the movie. I remember liking it more in the past. And I think there were a couple of things about it that I just found didn't land as well as they did before. Or I guess maybe I'm more sensitive to it. I don't know. Maybe I have changed, but some of the ways I guess in summary, both of these guys were kind of jerks. Like, I feel like Lauda was less so than Hunt, but Hunt was like a colossal jerk. And
well, I mean, look, yes. And also, like, I know what you're kind of, I feel like I could see what you're driving at. Like, Hunt's like philandering, right?
But well, in the way he treats his wife Susie, it's just even leaving aside the philandering, which is abysmal, but leaving that aside,
yeah, I mean, look, like, we don't know, I don't know their actual story, but like, sure, looking at the way it went down, it looked like neither of them treated either of the other one very well, to be honest. Like, it didn't really look like that they had, you know, like, nothing seemed to end well. And honestly, this is one of those situations where it was better for everyone, right? Like, and then, yeah. I mean, like, you know, there's a lot of like context that we're missing for these people, but also I think you need to remember the times
also
in which this movie is set, you know?
Yeah. And that's completely fair. But like, Niki Lauda is kind of a robot. He's portrayed as kind of a robot with no feeling. Like, that's not absolutely true, but he's very like stereotypically German, which I guess he's Austrian, but you know what I mean? Like, the stereotypical German is one who is, you know, completely calculating with little to no emotion. And that's kind of how he's being portrayed. That being said, I thought Daniel Brühl's performance was stellar, especially it doesn't, on the surface, Lauda doesn't seem like a terribly compelling character. He's no Joker from The Dark Knight. You know what I mean? He's not an over the top ridiculous thing. He's just kind of a quiet nerd that happened to be really good at racing cars. But I thought Daniel Brühl did a phenomenal job portraying him. But to come back to the things I didn't love as much, you know, the way that they treated, particularly Hunt treated, well, the way Hunt treated almost everyone in his life actually was no good. I was going to say his wife, but almost everyone was almost disposable to him, which I didn't love. I also thought while it was a very well shot film, I like your observation about it feeling like it was from a different time. I didn't think about it that way, but you're exactly right. But I felt like, with 2022 sensibilities, there was a lot more gratuitous nudity or gratuitous camera shots than I think were really necessary.
I was surprised by the nudity.
Yeah.
In the movie, but it didn't bother me. It was just
I wouldn't say it was bothersome. It was just unnecessary.
No, but I don't think it was unnecessary, really. You can, I think there could be an argument for whether there was that much nudity needed, but it did do a good job of establishing James Hunt's lifestyle.
That's true, and I would agree with that. But like when we see Lauda and his wife swimming in the pool, and she just happens to be topless, like would that scene have really been any worse if she had a top on? Like, would that? Do we really need that?
Sure.
You know, and
no,
like
I understand
when,
what you're saying. I get you.
And the other time that I found a little bit distasteful was like when they're in Rio or something like that. Which, granted, Rio, or I want to say it was Rio. I don't remember where it was, but it was somewhere where there was some carnival-looking thing happening, and they're, you know, focusing in on women's body parts. And it's like, yes, you can do that with a wide shot. You don't need to zoom in.
There are ways
we could do this that aren't quite so.
It does have that feeling of this movie's made for men,
right?
Know?
Yeah, well put. Yeah. So I mean, ultimately,
but bearing
like,
in mind,
fine.
This was 10 years ago too.
Yeah, that's
right?
the thing.
So,
that's the thing. And when I watched it the first time, I don't think I cared. And so I think I have changed a little bit since the first time I've seen this movie. But nonetheless, again, I'm trying to paint a 2013 film with 2022 sensibilities, and that's not entirely fair. But all in all, I thought it was a great movie. I thought it was really well done. I think. Both actors, you know, both Hemsworth and Brule did a very good job. Hemsworth, I think I find him to be a pretty likable person. So I think him being a complete prick is slightly out of his range. You know,
yeah,
it's
but
like,
I don't even see it as that. Like, I don't even see him as being like a bad person as such or like a jerk or whatever. I just like, honestly, I think Chris, he just seems like a lovable guy. As much as he could be, like, because this is the thing, like, everyone loves him, right? Like, that's like, I know what you're saying about him being a jerk. But everybody loves him. Like, that's kind of the point of the movie. Is like, everyone is his friend. Like, everyone wants to be him or be near him. Like, that's kind of what appears to have been James Hunt's lifestyle. I found it quite interesting to see the contrast of the both of them. I mean, I expect that was probably amped up a little bit. To give that divide. Like, I don't know if Niki Lauda really had no friends, but that's kind of like the way that they position it. Or like the idea of him saying to his wife on the wedding day, like, I guess it might as well be you.
Oh, yeah, stuff like that.
Like, I don't know how much of it's real. I have not done my research, but.
So I looked into this a little bit yesterday, and I am by no means an authority on such matters, but. Based on some Wikipedia trolling in spelunking, it seemed like they were actually relatively chummy to the point that I guess at some point early in their careers, they actually lived together, at least briefly. And so I think the movie amped up.
That's weird.
Isn't that wild?
Before or after Formula One?
Before. I think it was early in their careers, like at Formula 3 or thereabouts. From what I recall from having read this, like, I don't think that the rivalry was fabricated. Like, this is a well-known thing. Like, it was real.
Yeah, but also we've seen many instances of friends become blood rivals in Formula 1.
Yep, right? Yep.
So, like, there is the thing, like, they could have been close and then hated each other and then, I think, probably became close-ish after the two wins, because there is an element of respect that is shown in the movie between the two main characters, which I think makes a lot of sense.
So like looking at Wikipedia, while they competed on the track, Hunt readily admitted that the two were good friends from their early days. Quote, well, this is a distasteful phrase and I apologize, but I'm just reading the quote, gypsying around Europe together in Formula 3, where they became mates, not just casual acquaintances. The enduring friendship between the two continued until Hunt's death in 1993. So I think I'm not trying to say that this movie's a big farce. I don't think that's the case at all. It's just, I think that they were friends who wanted to figuratively kill each other on the track. You know, this is like you were saying a moment ago, like you can still be friendly and then still and you can either, that can become a bitter rivalry or it can just be a very strong, you know, a serious but yet friendly rivalry. And it seems that's what it was. Although certainly the movie portrays it as more bitter. And, you know, some of the like chirps back and forth at each other were very funny. And they tactically deployed the middle finger extremely effectively in this movie, which made me laugh.
I loved it.
In the word, the a-hole word, I think was very tactically deployed. Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty good. But it's worth noting, and you made brief mention of this earlier, but I think to set the stage, you know, as somebody who is a new fan to F1, and I speak for both of us, this was a very different F1 back in the day. And
oh yeah, man.
In the mid-70s, they opened the movie by Niki Lauda doing a voiceover saying, you know, 25 drivers start every year and 23 of them will make it to the end of the season. You know,
yeah,
and
that's,
and obviously that's probably not a rule or anything. Like it's
the odds are two people die every year, which is horrifically hurt.
Right. Which Niki Lauda was. And so if you think about your profession where you have a 1 in 20 or 2 in 25 chance of passing away, like that's a very odd job to take on. And Lauda goes through the movie saying, I don't know where if this is true or not, or if it's made up, but he keeps saying, you know, I will accept a 20% chance of death anytime I get behind the wheel, and any more than that is no good. And that's a very odd way of looking at it, but if that's how he is able to get himself in that race car, then so be it. But it's a very, very dangerous sport. Like, I don't think it was intended to be dangerous, but they hadn't put the focus on safety as they have certainly in the last few years.
I mean, yes. But I think maybe just then they just didn't have the tools.
That's also fair. Yep, right? I agree with that.
To make them safe. Like, I just don't think that was a thing. You know, like everything's so primitive compared to what we have now. You know, I was also thinking like just how much the sport has advanced in 50 years.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're using wheels, like just regular wheels for the car, to drive, like driving wheel.
Yep.
There's no buttons on it. There's no screen on it, right? Obviously. But you know what, like how different it is? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, these cars are packed full of sensors and all kinds of interesting stuff that they have. Like how long a pit stop takes.
Oh yeah, it's forever. It's you can measure it with a calendar.
It's like a good 20 minutes or something, you know. Like, but like it's just all very, very different. Yeah. A couple of things that I found interesting: the pay drivers were a thing, and politics were a thing.
Mm-hmm.
That hasn't changed.
Nope, not a bit.
And I found not that fascinating. Bit. It's also hilarious to think that Niki Lauda, considered one of the best of all time, is technically a pay driver. Mm-hmm. He just paid for himself.
Right
to get
right.
into was it BRM? Was that the team?
Yeah, I think that's right. But either way, and to back up in case you're not familiar with F1, so there's, you know, 24, 26 drivers, 20 drivers, 20 drivers this
20
year,
drivers.
Right? Yeah,
I was having 210 total brain ones.
Yep. So there's 20 drivers in current modern F1, and most of them, I would say, many of them have risen through the ranks from go-karting to Formula 3, 2, 1, etc. But some of them, either they or typically mommy or daddy, have humongous pocketbooks, and they basically pay their way
They still have to compete in the lower leagues because you have to build up points to get your super license.
That's fair.
You can't just walk in. Like,
that's true.
This is the thing that does annoy me sometimes, is like, someone like, say, like Lance Stroll,
mm-hmm.
he had a very successful pre-F1 career.
Mm-hmm.
There's a horrific storm happening right now. I don't know if you heard that thunder.
I did not. It's like, raining everywhere.
It's rocking my studio right now.
Cool.
But, you know, like there is like an element of success that has to occur. Like they have to at least be good, right?
Yeah.
And then they can, you know, then the money is worth paying, right?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it's just funny, like, and obviously, like, yeah, Lauda took out a huge loan and bought his way into a team, and then showed how good he was, and then moved over to Ferrari.
Right.
But one thing I wanted to talk about was a few things actually. So one's like, you know, funny, like the politics is still happening, like the following the rules to try and get disqualifications and all that kind of stuff. And one thing is like, you know, smoking and drinking everywhere, which is, you know, kind of funny.
That was
on the smoking thing. Cigarettes are terrible, but they made the car liveries look so good.
They really did. You are
the
right
cigarette
about that.
Brands. Like, this is what, when I was growing up as well, the way that, you know, it was all cigarettes, right? For Formula One. Unfortunately, now it's all crypto, but it was all cigarettes, you know, back then.
Yep.
And the colors are so good. You know, like my favorite is the John Player Special Lotus, which is the black and gold Lotus.
Oh, yes,
that's
yes.
Mm-hmm. featured mm-hmm. quite a lot in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when I was growing up, like Camel on the Williams, the blue and yellow.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, you know, obviously Marlboro on the Ferrari, the red and white and stuff like, you know, cigarettes, terrible. Branding was nice on race cars, even though, of course... But you know what I'm saying, right? Don't come at me. You know, like, it's bad that Formula One cars had it on there because it made smoking cool, right? But that wasn't my decision. I just like the way the colors look.
Yep, all
that's right?
All
everyone
we're
understands
saying.
What I'm saying? Great.
All we're saying.
I think one of the things that's really worth pressing on is Niki Lauda's tenacity. So, like, he only missed two races.
Yeah, he was
basically... 6 weeks.
He was basically burned. And we should at least briefly recap in case you haven't watched the movie, although you should.
No, there's no point doing that. No, you can talk about it quickly, but there's no point recapping the movie up.
No. Just the his crash. So
okay.
They're at the Nürburgring Nordschleife, which is the, you know, 13-mile monstrous track that you can still drive on today. I drove on it in 2013. You can drive on it today.
There was talks of Nürburgring coming back in the 2020 season, but it didn't happen.
I can't see
being one
that.
Of, well, they needed tracks, right?
Yeah. But anyway, so it's this like 13-mile thing in the middle of like the German wilderness. And when it's 13 miles long, it covers a lot of physical area. And so I guess there was, even at the time, reading up on this a little bit yesterday, there was a lot of debate as to whether or not this is a smart place to have an F1 race. Because if you have a fire, for example, how do you get the fire people to the fire when you have 13 miles of track to cover? Like, it's just, it's untenable. And so it was raining really, really badly right before the race. And Niki says, you know, I want to call a meeting of all the drivers and I want to vote and see if we should just, you know, I don't remember if it was postpone or cancel, but one way or another, I think he said cancel the race. And in his estimation, it wouldn't empirically change the point standings for all the drivers. Like, it's not like it's taking away anything from anyone. It's just that we would ignore this race and continue on the next week or whatever. And he tries to get everyone to vote to say, no, this is no good. And Hunt basically sways the room and convinces them that Nikki's being a big baby and they should just race and just leave it on the track. And so after the first couple of laps, Niki Lauda, you know, screams off the track. They imply that there was a mechanical failure, although in my research, I couldn't figure out if that was accurate or not. And I think nobody will ever really know because the car was, you know, destroyed. But he slides off the track, hits the wall, and his entire car becomes a fireball. And it's only because of some drivers that stopped to get him out of the car that he is alive at all. And then he, you know, has to recover. And he was
just horrifically burned inside and outside of his body, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they said he had like scarring in his lungs, you know, and it's just basically his whole like body is scarred really mm-hmm. badly. Mm-hmm.
And apparently he lost like most of his right ear, which you can see, you know, even in modern footage. I guess he had to get one of his eyelids like reconstructed really, really badly because it, like, it had been burned or something like that. And like you were saying earlier, like, they show fairly graphically the, you mm-hmm. know, the skin graft process.
Oh, when they're taking the plasters yep. off. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Oh,
and they're
God.
Showing him, you know, willingly with seemingly little to no anesthesia going and getting his lungs basically vacuumed. And it is physically uncomfortable.
That's
for
what
they're as
like
as
removing
a
liquid, right? They're mm-hmm. like removing liquid from his lungs.
Yeah, and as a viewer, it is physically uncomfortable to watch. I can mm-hmm. only imagine how unbelievably painful and awful it was to experience. But to show, and to come back around to what you were saying, to show how much like hustle and tenacity he had, as soon as they pull the thing out and he's recovering and clearly like feels awful, he says, do it again. And they're like, what are you talking about? You probably already, but just by doing this, we've saved you, but we've also probably hurt your lungs. He says, do it again, because he sees, you know, Hunt winning all these races and mm-hmm. just can't stand it. And, you know, and so he goes through it a second time. And I don't know if that's made up or not, but golly, it's just, he had so much tenacity is the word I think you used. And it's so good. He had so much tenacity and so much drive.
You'd never be able to do this today.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
Right. Like for good reason. But he would never, if this was today, you would not be cleared to race.
No, certainly not.
After that short period of time, you know, he probably wasn't ready to race, but he did it anyway.
Yep. And then two races later, he comes back in, like you said.
Yeah. And I just found that it's just incredible that someone was able to put themselves through that, like to ever get back in a car again. And like, I understand that these guys, this is what they do, right? Look at Romain Grosjean, right?
Yep.
You know, there is interviews of him in Drive to Survive saying that he's done, but yet we know that he's now joined IndyCar at that point.
Yeah.
And you get it, right? Like, these people live for this. It's their purpose in life to try and take that away from them. I don't know if you can do that to somebody. Like, this is just what they do, and I have a lot of respect for some people who can be so focused on one thing. I think it's kind of incredible.
I have an easy question for you.
Yeah.
Does Chris Hemsworth sound like he's from Australia or from the United Kingdom?
Oh, this is going to actually... I was like, I wanted to make a point, and now I can make it. His accent's terrible. Olivia Wilde's accent is excellent.
Olivia Wilde's, to my ears, sounded very good.
Super good. And what I also found really interesting about it is, like, it didn't even sound like her. It sounded like... it. Like, you know how you can do an accent, but it's still you. She sounded like a different person. I thought that was really impressive. I thought it was really impressive, her accent. Chris Hemsworth. The problem with Chris Hemsworth is Chris Hemsworth's Australian. Did you know this?
Yes. I knew that much. But I could...
I think the issue
ear...
is Australian is too close to British.
See, that's what I was going to say. To my dumb American ears, like, if you put me with a... classically British person and a classically Australian person next to each other, I can tell the difference, but just sitting there, I it's hard for me to discern one from the other. And so,
I just think it's like the slip ups just mean that he would end up just sounding way more like an Australian. So I think they kind of just like, I think at a certain point, just like let him do whatever he wanted, you know.
So not so great for Chris Hemsworth, but full points for Olivia Wilde.
Full points for Olivia Wilde, yeah. Yeah, I like this movie, man. I'm pleased I watched it. Like, I'm happy to know a little bit more about the story. I found the story interesting and inspirational in a way. You know, I really liked the relationship that we saw on screen between the two of them. Like, which is obviously played for some dramatic effect, which I completely expect and understand in a movie like this. But I appreciated, like, seeing these two people that were rivals actually respect each other, because I feel like that's a little bit of what we see today. You know, like these people that they're rivals, they put each other in danger sometimes, but yet still find a way to be able to respect each other at the end, because ultimately, you know, two rivals are two of 20 people that are doing this thing. They're 10% of all of the people doing it, you know? So they all need each other to be able to understand each other. And so these guys can be rivals, but they also are simpatico.
Yeah, and this wasn't a deep movie by most measures, but you had spoken about this earlier. I thought upon this viewing, I got more from the motivations of each of them than I did in the past, particularly around, you know, needing each other. And like you had said that Nikki had said to Hunt, you know, you're just as responsible for getting me into the hospital as you are getting me out of the hospital. Mm-hmm. And if he phrased it slightly differently,
you're
but in other words,
responsible for getting me back in the car.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. It is a funny way of looking at things. And I think he's right, and it makes sense, but it's not the way I would look at things. Like, if it were me, I'd probably be such a sad sack, but I would, you know, I wouldn't have raced if it wasn't for you swaying the room, and then I wouldn't be hurt, and I wouldn't be here. Oh, woe is me. But, you know, when you're a competitor, like an alpha competitor like that, it's, well, okay, here I am. This is the hand I've been dealt. Now I got to beat him no matter what, even if it takes vacuuming my lungs twice to do it. And like watching him put the helmet over his scarred head, like it was handled very, very deftly, I think, and very, very well done. I also really loved at the end, and my understanding is this quote is either real or the spirit of, you know, it was received as, you know, but well, when Lauda watched the film, like he never took any particular issue with it from what I gather. But at the end of the movie, they say, Hunt was Lauda saying Hunt was among the very few I liked and even fewer that I respected and the only one that I envied or something along those lines. And, I thought that was really good in, you know, their whole meeting. And
that is a quote from Lauda. That was a quote from Lauda when Hunt died and they used it in the movie.
There you go. Now I thought all of the movie was well done. Obviously I had a couple of quibbles with it here and there, but it was, especially as a racing film, I think it did a very good job of giving you the right amount of racing. You know, it wasn't all about let's discuss the super intricacies of the cars. The handful of times that they got particularly technical, particularly when Lauda first gets to F1, it at least made enough sense that there was no red flags for, you know, as I'm listening to it, like, what? That doesn't make any sense. It was very well handled. I really did like the movie a lot, and I think there's more depth and more humor to it than I would have expected. A couple of other funny observations that I noticed. Did you happen to see any odd cars on the track? You mentioned a couple of the liveries, but did you notice any of the odd cars on the track?
Yeah, there was a quite weird one.
Yeah, so I noticed that there was what I could swear was a six-wheeled F1 car. And I saw this at two or three points in the movie, and I was like, that can't be real. Sure enough, the Tyrrell P34, which is commonly known as the six-wheeler, was a Formula One race car designed by Derek Gardner, Tyrrell's chief designer. The car used four specially manufactured 10-inch diameter wheels and tires at the front and two ordinary size wheels at the back. This was apparently a real thing for a couple of seasons.
This is weird. Very weird. It's but it weird. Was also another thing from this movie of, like, the cars looked vastly different to each other in a way that they're not now. Because computers, you know what I mean? Like, computers have refined the designs so much. Like, you know, we're in a new era right now, right? And the cars have differences, but by and large, the overall shape is the same, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think these days it's so regulated that you actually can't do. No one could pull up with that now.
Yeah,
right?
No, definitely not. And apparently, a couple of years after this debuted, they changed the regulations specifically so that you may only have four wheels on your car. But nevertheless, it was just wild. I wonder if you noticed another, perhaps intentional, probably accidental callback. When they were doing, I think it was like a montage of racing or something like that. I forget exactly when it was, but sure enough, just like Days of Thunder, Give Me Some Lovin' by, I think it was Stevie Winwood or some band that Stevie Winwood was a part of.
I didn't notice
that. Was featured prominently, which made me laugh quite a bit. Just like Days of Thunder, like one of the big scenes in Days of Thunder has the same, I think a different version of the song, but the same song.
What is the benefit of a six-wheeled Formula One car?
So my limited understanding was that there were very particular regulations with regard to the front wing. And if you had a regular size tire up front, some of the tire would protrude out of the side of the wing. Not literally, but you know what I mean? Like, the wing is narrower than the front tires. So there would be some amount of air that would be directly hitting the front tire rather than 100% of the air hitting the car in the front on the wing. So what they figured out was, with this Tyrrell, they could make a full width wing, but they would have to have little baby front tires. And they thought, well, two little baby front tires ain't going to work because we don't have enough contact patch. We don't have enough grip. But hey, what if we put four little baby front tires? It's clever. It's very clever. So then all four of them can be behind the front wing, better aerodynamics, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. At least that was the theory. So it was like an oddity of the circumstantial regulations of the time that born this into existence. But
in general, these cars are beautiful, but they are toys compared to what we have today.
Yes. Oh, and actually, bringing that up, it's tangentially related. A lot of the cinematography and, like, the shots of the engines and sometimes, like, the inner workings of the engines, toward the end, you would see the intake and exhaust valves pump coming down in super duper slow motion. I think it was all CGI, and I do not care. There's nothing wrong with that. It was incredible. I thought it looked great.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun to get that context.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of some of the other, like, little mini things I wanted to point out. Did you notice that the McLaren boss was an American?
Yeah.
Just like today. It's not an American company.
Like, you know, clearly.
Yeah, I had no idea, because Zach Brown is the CEO of McLaren Racing or whatever their formal name is today. And I don't recall what this individual's name was, nor do I remember the actor's name. But there was an American who was somehow one of the executives of the McLaren F1 team that Hunt was racing for, which just struck me as very funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I also liked, at one point, they were talking about the Ferraris and how they weren't doing well. And I forget exactly when this was in the movie, but somebody says, you know, it's a Ferrari, and implying it should be amazing. Somebody responds, it's a crap box, up until recently was also very true.
Yeah, I found that funny because, Lauda says that right when he's finished. Like, just references how bad the car is. Mm-hmm. And it was just very funny to me from last time. Like, last season or whatever. Yep. Like, yes, you could have said that before about the Ferrari. Not anymore, though.
I know. It was like you had said earlier, there's a lot of parallels and interesting, like, oh, that's just like today. And, that's also just like today. It's surprising. If you look at the vehicles are night and day different. Like you said a moment ago, they're barely even in the same league. But all of the squishy bits of F1, all of that is really not that different than it was 50. God, I can't believe it was 50 years, but 50 years ago, it's really not that different today. And some of the race courses are different. Like they were at Watkins Glen, and which is nowhere near where F1 is today. If I'm not
mistaken. There's a lot of races that I haven't seen yet. Japan, Brazil, these are places that have been on the calendar for a long time, but have not been during the COVID era.
Oh, and I mentioned bringing this up earlier. This was the race where Lauda got injured was the last race on the Nordschleife. Literally after that, they were like, no, this is too much. On the Nürburgring. Well, the Nordschleife is a portion of the Nürburgring, but yes.
Then
normally I would never make that distinction. I would just call it the Nürburgring. But in this particular context, there's the F1 track of today, which I forget what exactly that's called. I forget the name of that. And then the Nordschleife is what we think of. And when I refer to the Nürburgring in any other context except this one, that's what I mean. And so, they haven't raced on the Nordschleife for F1 since this accident. And you can understand it.
Japan and Brazil are back on the calendar this year, though.
Ah, nice, nice.
Japan in October and Brazil in November. And I'm looking forward to both of those races because they're tracks I haven't seen.
Yep. This is a good movie. You're right. I shouldn't have pumped the brakes so much.
It's a good movie.
It's worth watching. I don't personally think you need to be an F1 fan or super fan to watch. Like I said, the first couple of times.
I think it's made not to be. Same as Ford vs. Ferrari.
So, I completely agree. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. I think we've already queued up what we're going to watch for next year in theory. And it is, by all accounts, not as good a movie as this one. Fun, but not as good. So this is a good one. And next year in 2023, we'll give you a perhaps not so great one.
Relay FM listeners, thank you so much for your continued support of what we do here. And we'll be back again next year.
Yep. Thank you so much.